Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
And welcome to the AEW Dynamite Preview. I'm Michael Sidgwick, joined by fellow Dudley boy Michael Hamflett to discuss everything that's in store for us on tonight's show. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure to subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts. We preview and review Dynamite and Rampage, WWE Monday Night Raw, SmackDown, NXT 2.0, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have wrestler interviews, we hold roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. But Hamflett, how hyped are you for AEW Dynamite tonight?
Medium hyped. We were having a nice conversation about what should be a nice episode in the office before we hit record, because we're nerds and we love this stuff more than just when we're in front of a microphone. There are elements of this, regardless of how the show is going to play out, that should fill us with joy. The sight of Daly's Place, hosting a Dynamite, obviously in Jacksonville before they go to Orlando for the pay-per-view. Every normal Daly's Place is a reminder of the abnormal Daly's Place, and the fact that we're not in the darkest timeline is enough. The fact that Andy Murray brought up, wisely, that AEW are not the hottest go-home show, those two things coming together, I think tonight is the night where we just get all of the good, because I think they've assembled quite a nice card as well for this Jacksonville crowd, for this better timeline Dynamite. I'm game for this.
I'm absolutely game for this. Just a note on Daly's Place as well. It does have a certain magic to it that's completely and utterly organic. I do love the idea of them returning to it. Even when they do a major show at Daly's Place, which they've kind of done post Double or Nothing 2021 on more than one occasion.
They had the dreaded Saturday run.
Yeah, the dreaded Saturday run. They did a holiday themed show over Christmas. That When it's hot, it's hot. I love the backdrop, I love the magic, I love the sentiment, the romance behind the building, the aesthetic, the feel, everything about it. And I expect this to be very, very good indeed. They've done the big promo sell on last week's show, which almost functioned like a go-home. We're getting two go-home shows. There's one match in particular that I think will go really quite long. And it's quite an interesting twist on the go-home shows that AEW tend to do, which are, they've already done the promo big sells, so they tend to go really flat with it. They do either non-canon developments and that don't really pertain to the pay-per-view, or they just put certain wrestlers who are in upcoming matches and then they win those matches and then they cut a little promo and it's all very contrived and here's what you're going to get at the pay-per-view, so here it is on TV. I just feel like the Casino Battle Royale should add a different dimension with actual stakes and drama. I think we're going to get two go-home shows for the price of one, effectively, including last week's show. But before we actually get into the meat of the actual show on paper, this is going to be Tony Khan's big, huge announcement, which in typical fashion, he has completely sold with a lot of conviction, whether it's misplaced or in fact not. He has compared it to try and deduce what this is. To the First Dance, which it's not going to be anywhere near as good as the First Dance, because the First Dance was legitimately one of the best things that's ever happened in pro wrestling in terms of the viral marketing campaign. Now the execution matched everyone's wildly optimistic projections of what it might be, which we were encouraged to do. So that was a venue announcement in effect, but for a very incredible reason. There's simply not a debut as big as CM Punk's. No. So it's not going to be that. He's even...
I mean, unless he's got Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah, imagine
that'd be a turn up.
Imagine that. That would be incredible. But yeah, it's absolutely not happening. So it's not going to be a CM Punk size debut. It doesn't feel like it's going to be a debut at all. It feels like more of an event, but we've had talk of they're finally hitting the West Coast. That was announced. What's it going to be? What on earth is it going to be? We've done a long-form discussion, we should point out, so let's not go over all of the same ground. If you just search Tony Khan, huge announcement on Acast, Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you get your podcast from, you'll be able to listen to that. Then do it now, otherwise it'll be well out of date. So what is it going to be?
Cesaro. No, not really. So the comparison to the first dance, I think, is his attempt. He gets these wrong all the time. Like, even when you want to be kind to the promotional moxie of a wrestling promoter, he gets this. The Christian thing, he got wrong. It wasn't that he didn't have something cool to show us all, but the way he just expressed that was all wrong. And I think the comparison to the first dance might be that he's wanting us not to think of a debut as big as CM Punk, because as you've pointed out, there isn't one. Or to even think of something that is... Both IRL and kayfabe, momentous, which is what CM Punk's debut was. I worry that that's the direction that he sent people in, and I don't think it's any of these things. I think the element of the first dance, what he's aiming for, is how momentous it was, is how landscape-shifting it felt. And I think what he's... it's obviously what I'm building to, is Pac returning.
Yeah.
Jake
Hager in an empty arena, man.
I feel like I've just turned this into a series of digs, but this is the problem. He gets this sort of stuff wrong. Landscape-shifting stuff is... international tours, which is boring because it's an international podcast and that doesn't matter to our American listeners, but they still never toured the UK. International tours, for example, that would be landscape shifting, because who else has attempted a full-scale international tour that wasn't an embarrassing failure, five-star, to compete with WWE in the UK? They're one of their like other biggest markets, or Canada, for example.
You get pissed on for that.
There's a good chance you're going to get pissed on because he gets this stuff wrong. Landscape shifting, and this is where I think this is going, by the way, is the network, the streaming service, the whatever it is they end up calling it, because it is both a product that I think people want, and at 3 years old, AEW now, there's a lot of fans that will be jonesing for another way to indulge in like getting their AEW fix with history of Dynamite, Rampage, being the Elite, Sammy's vlog, whatever it is they can load onto it. But if you load in the potential purchase of Ring of Honor, or at very least Ring of Honor's back catalogue, the things that currently matter about Ring of Honor, if you load in the possible agreement with PWG to be able to get a load of that archive footage, because so much of that, you know, is in AEW's DNA with the Young Bucks and the like, basically anything that they can pull together for this streaming service, it's not just our streaming service that ships the landscape, it's the idea that AEW, as they've tried to be all along, are also stewards and custodians of professional wrestling history. And here's the other side of that. Yes, you can spend your $9.99 on that version of history. You can also spend your $9.99 version on ours. And it's yet something else that stokes up a bit of a rivalry that, like, we can all talk about the positivity trolls that are like, just watch everything. It's not how capitalism works. Like, these companies kind of want a little bit of that push and pull as well for their own sort of business drivers. I think it's that. How that'll land with people, I don't know, but it's that sense of a shifting landscape and the tectonic plates moving again is, I think, what he was maybe getting at with the first dance comparison. I think could be proven wrong, and maybe he has got a debut in his back pocket.
Yeah, I think a comparison to how momentous it is without being anywhere near the same thing as the first dance is probably the rabbit hole down which to go. On that basis, maybe we've discussed this, but an AEWX New Japan Pro Wrestling Super Show, maybe the very first match announced for it. Imagine if like they do that and you're like, oh, well, it could still be like, remember ROH New Japan War of the World?
Yeah.
Very cool, but very politically motivated. You didn't really get these incredible like cross brand matches. So that will always hang in the head of people, hang heavy in the titty of the fans who were like, all right, this is good, but okay, I could miss it. So me, like, Danielson versus Tanahashi on a graphic and more.
January 5th, 2023, Omega Ricardo.
Yes.
For example, something that, like the first dance, you're showing people a venue, a place, and a thing.
Yeah.
And it's something for pro wrestling fans to absolutely lose their minds over.
Yeah, absolutely. I had something in the top of my head that I'd not actually previously discussed on the long form podcast, and it has completely fallen out of my head when you were talking. I hope I remember this. But yeah, it has to be huge, basically. It absolutely has to be huge. I can't really see it being huge but then he's wrong-footed as before, even though he has previous. This is going to piss me off. I'm going to kill this podcast for the next minute before I forget.
What, Danielson Tanahashi adjacent?
No, it was something completely different. Like, I just basically had a masterstroke. Simpsons thing when Homer's in financial troubles and he's got something in the palm of his hand.
Yeah.
And it's like, the best invention ever. He's like, oh, I forgot what it is. Tell me what it is.
Oh, man. The Great Loss Theory.
It's basically Tenacious D tribute. I've just completely forgotten.
On a preview pod. We'll do some...
It's not venue. It's not signing. It's not streaming service. It's not Super Show. It's not... ROH. I'm telling you, there was something that popped into my head that was genius and now it's completely gone. I'm so annoyed by myself.
It's that Bill Murray thing as well. When that's what happens tonight and then you say on the podcast, I actually called us on the preview but I couldn't remember what the thing was. And when Bill Murray bumps into people and he says, and no one will ever believe you.
Yeah.
That's going to be a thing. I mean, we're going, oh yeah, it's a Ginny Recon situation.
Oh, for God's sake. Anyway. Anyway. Let's get back to my nudes. I will cover for my... procrastination. I'm trying. Right, okay. Let's get my nudes. I'm just going to do a Meltzer impression to try and fill the dead air and somehow get a pop.
You got one.
Without exposing my games.
You rampage wrapped me there.
Nudes. So, Casino Battle Royale. Who advances to Revolution? I always overestimate my own head quality of the Battle Royale genre and AEW's version of them, which has been incredibly uneven. I think this is going to be better than both Royal Rumble matches put together, but it actually might not be. There's so much scope to do incredible stuff here. You can do some overlap with the Inner Circle. You can build a match with Chris Jericho and Eddie Kingston. You can do more stuff that suggests a rift between Private Party and Matt Hardy, though that wouldn't make sense given this trios match we're going to get at Revolution. What you can do is tell a lot of overlapping stories with some incredible action in between there. And you've got the ability now to have this incredible tag team roster interact with itself to its full potential, no offense, Gun Club, in the heat of the match when it eventually gets to it. My idea for how they should book this, and I'll get yours imminently, is at some point Adam Cole and Red Dragon, as heels, are going to fight some iteration of the Elite. With that in mind, AEW, who love a saga, who love a slow burn, I think the play here is to put the Young Bucks in very early. Borrow one of the best WWE tricks. Because the best ones are still worth absolutely ripping off. Like the genre itself, for example. The Young Bucks start very, very early, maybe even number one, with the idea being that they could put on a half an hour potential showcase performance in which they are dicks at first. When they realise they're in trouble, they start to actually fight and work like baby faces, and you get a fabulous glimpse of how great they are in that role as well. With the idea being they're going to turn face soon, and it's another classic wrestling trick. You put them in a match in which they can display their heroics, then people will start to receive them as heroes. It's all very simple. There's potential here for them to do that. And then when you get to FTR at the end, which is how I think the final two should go, you could do something again. I've got these wild projections of how great this match could be. It never usually happens. But they could do, was it the Royal Rumble 2007? With the Taker, Michaels finale, yeah. Where it's just...
10-minute match.
Where it's just incredible. You could do that with FTR and the Young Bucks here. And I'm not really nailed on the master of who goes over, because we've got ideas about the pros and cons of the Young Bucks being the winners and not being the winners. But they could do Bucks versus FTR for the final 10 minutes. And a match within a match, that could be incredible. But if they are going this route, where the Young Bucks are slowly going to turn face, and this is the very first glimpse of that, my personal fantasy booking would not only be that FTR sequence at the end, not only starting very early, so they have to just fight and do it honourably as well. Another thing that I think AEW haven't done anywhere near enough of is explore the chemistry between Matt and Nick Jackson and Evil Uno and Stu Grayson, who've had some absolutely incredible battles over the years, and they've had one match on Dynamite during the pandemic, which wasn't great. They didn't really explore it in the Survivor Series match that Hangman Page lost. I'd like to see them work loads of sequences together, because they're always the tits, and tits matches get people over, and they want to get over as baby faces, albeit on a slow basis. I've rabbited on about my own projection of what the match should be. Who do you think wins it?
I've lost interest in my own fantasy booking, so I think the Young Bucks win. Last week, I was all big into the idea that Red Dragon were going to win the first chapter of this attempt to build this fairly contrived three-way, but that the Young Bucks' involvement in it, and indeed the match's existence, was kind of a red herring, and a top flight was the example I gave, that could exist as the joker of this casino. Like, in a tag team one, is it just you get the last spot? Is that what being the Joker is in the tag one?
Was there a Joker at Revolution?
I honestly can't remember.
I don't think there was, but now that we're on the subject, I think they should do at least one Battle Royale or face the Revolution ladder match in which there isn't a Joker.
Mm.
Not only is it a pretty hefty precedent to set, you're going to get a hot new signing 4 times a year. I mean, yeah. CW would get one like 16 times a year at this point. I think they should quietly abandon it as a thing that happens all of the time. Otherwise, I've had loads of people in my replies asking who the Joker's going to be.
Mm.
They've created an expectation where everyone thinks as soon as this match, and they've done it all of the time, so of course people are going to ask about this. But I'm not necessarily thinking there's going to be a Joker. One, they've not hyped it at
the tag
all.
One didn't have suits. So that the tag one just had tags entering, didn't it?
Yeah, so it didn't have the same gimmick. But they've done Jokers for the ladder matches as well, which also weirdly staggered as well in a way that I don't like, but that's by the by. I think it's time now to just abandon the concept.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A change of seasons means adventures in rain, shine, mist, or snow, or all of the above on the same day. This season, prepare for every season with the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. With all-condition traction and materials and features to keep you comfy and dry no matter what, you'll be ready for anything. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase. ALLBIRDS.com, code FRESHSOCKS.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So that people just don't think they're going to get one every time. I think it's a decent marketing thing to do. Otherwise, you create an expectation that can't be met. But sorry, I interrupted you mid-flow.
No, it's okay. Because that's obviously a key element to this. Because with there being a Joker or not could dictate how obvious this becomes. Because I love the idea of the Young Bucks going along as well. I've had way more investment in the Young Bucks as an act since the Hangman Page Kenny Omega match. Because that was the kickstart of their babyface turn. At very least, like a sort of a unique wrinkle in their characters. It shattered some of the like over the top, ludicrous heel rich boys machinations that had defined the run before that point.
Yeah.
It definitely softened them a little bit, and I'd like to see the in ring continuation of that. Now that we, you know, to be fair, since was it Matt or Nick that had COVID, they've not really had many opportunities.
Both of them had it,
so like they've not had a lot of opportunities to like give their physical best yet, and I think they will over like a long stint in this match again. Like the old Rumble tricks still work; they always work. I love that idea of the FTR sequence at the end, by the way, because that would be the second time they've been able to like effectively promote the Young Bucks versus FTR without actually doing it. The first time being when Hangman Page grabbed the leg, it was like, oh, we're going to get it, and then they actually took it away without having to promote it as a straight up match. A Joker pitch I had, which is certainly not mine, or if it is mine, it's everybody else's too, is the Briscoes, not to sign for AEW, but to just get in the business of FTR and somehow cost them a place in it. Like there's that really hot Ring of Honor angle that was built up that has thus far gone nowhere, but we are coming to WrestleMania weekend where there's going to be a Ring of Honor show. It would be a nice way for there to be an AEW overlap without AEW directly, as they always said they wouldn't, like involving themselves.
Yeah, so it's fine.
Did they? I can't remember. Did they involve themselves
in
Mania?
The House Always Wins as a house show in Daly's place. Like, and the reason why they did it was they thought they'd get a strong house.
Uh-huh.
Because of the fact
I forgot about that, yeah. But like, so Well, yeah, then so that like any kind of overlap over WrestleMania weekend that might take an odd headline, you could have that match on that Ring of Honor show. You know, now that Ring of Honor's in Indy again, it's probably the best time and place for Briscoes versus FTR. So that maybe takes them out of that match. If that occurs, then I genuinely could see the Young Bucks being like inadvertently eliminated as a result of something to do with Red Dragon or something to do with Adam Cole to further that without putting the Young Bucks in the match, and then you throw in a babyface team. I still think it's going to be the Young Bucks. And just one other last observation on this, because I know we've gone long on it, but I guess the match itself will go long. It's kind of, it should theoretically dominate this Dynamite. A problem I had with the Battle Royal last week was the haves and the have-nots was way too obvious, and worse, Proud and Powerful were in the have-nots, and the whole point of that Inner Circle dissolution, or Chris Jericho like kind of negging them, was for them to then prove him wrong, and they chased a meme and got chucked out.
Yeah,
like they didn't prove him wrong at all. If anything, it was like, oh, you need to go
the
back
the thing was cool,
it was alright, yeah, but like you need to go back to Chris Jericho. They weren't, yeah, you know, they weren't kind of considered as potential winners when we were all talking about that, like that upper tier of teams in that match. I'd like to see, because these are going to be random drawings, be a bit less transparent about it. Like, scatter the obvious favourites through this in a different way than you did last week, so that I don't need to just abandon the first half of the match. The Young Bucks going long is probably the solution to that. But yeah, I'd like to feel like, it's funny you mentioned like Uno and Grayson, I want to feel like other teams have more of a chance, because otherwise, this whole thing has been way too obvious a contrivance to get to the triple, to get to the three-way at the pay-per-view.
As soon as it started, everyone just sort of, well, they're doing the piggybacking Elite Melodrama onto the Jurassic Express tag team title reign. So yeah, I would like to be wrong-footed. You'll get a class match even if you don't get wrong-footed, but it's all a bit reverse-engineered and obvious.
Where are the rankings at this point as well? Because obviously, by having two number one contenders matches, the rankings have been abandoned. But without me checking in front of me now, I couldn't tell you who are doing well in that top
FTR
five.
FTR are in there. Darby and Sting should be, not in this match, but they should be up there as well. They've had matches.
Yeah,
I don't know. The other, if it's not the Young Bucks, it could be FTR. The Young Bucks, as we fantasy booked last week, could second Adam Cole because they've got no reason not to, where they did have a reason at All Out 2019. And I feel like the nod to Hangman Page is always going to get paid off. And
yeah,
it's going to get paid off here. There's lots of drama, even if it's only really centered around, I would say, two teams at best at this point. In two matches that are set to tease key matches at Revolution, the first of which is Adam Cole and Red Dragon taking on Hangman Page, Silver and Reynolds. It's a very New Japan Road 2 trios match as a means of sort of teasing what you're going to get at the pay-per-view to theoretically like encourage you to part your cash. There's a few ways, of course, they could book this. They could have a designated jobber. they could have Page taking a fall by the last shot, because I think at this point there is a danger that the main event doesn't really feel like the one that's actually driving people to pay for this pay-per-view and be interested in it. There's lots of ways they can go. I will ask for yours imminently. But in what might be either indictment of the main event at Revolution, which I have think they've done a better job of the last in the last however many weeks, so I'm kind of more excited to see John Silver and Kyle O'Reilly do like incredibly fast, hard-hitting stuff, like in a sort of whirlwind of activity, than I am finally seeing Paige and Cole sort of throw hands.
Mm.
They have an opportunity to make that feel elusive, to make it feel like Adam Cole's a very slippery customer who's crafty enough to have Paige's number. They kind of need to sell me on it tonight. I suppose that's why the match exists.
Yeah, I cannot pick a winner here, because I was trying to think of finishing sequences where everybody got what they needed. We're just days away from a pay-per-view where, okay, so theoretically Adam Cole can't, like, ideally you don't want Adam Cole losing. A lot of people had issues with him losing Orange Cassidy and remaining in contention, so he can't really lose. Red Dragon, the bankers, like, they're already in the tag title match, so having them get defeated is a little bit WWE, isn't it? It's like they're competing for the tag battles and they're losing just days before.
Alex Reynolds is probably going to lose.
Silver or Reynolds feels like they're designated jobber, and Silver's the more over of the two, so then it kind of falls onto Alex Reynolds. But you kind of made the point at the start here, we're kind of opening up with, well, like, how do we preserve Page and Cole? Do you want either of them to look particularly weak? I don't think you do, but only because I think the match already feels weak. I think in a way you've got to protect both them being strong. And something that feels to me like it's been one of the huge focuses of this program has been the power of the bookshop. So when you mentioned Adam Cole as a slippery customer, I immediately thought of Adam Cole being lined up to be hit with a bookshot, slipping underneath it, but then Paige still connecting with, let's say, Kyle O'Reilly or Bobby Fish. It doesn't result in the finish, but that guy at that point is dead and he is absolutely out of the match. Cole slips underneath that, the brawl continues, and eventually he nails Reynolds with a super kick and Cole gets his win. But we've seen that the bookshot is absolutely a death blow. Adam Cole absolutely should be afraid of it. Paige, I'm doing it again, stands tall. There's too many ways in which this can end in a bit of a WWE everybody needs to be serviced. Maybe I'm not giving AEW enough credit. Maybe they do lean in one way specifically and like cast doubt on one of these Adams. If I had to guess at one of them, I would say Adam Cole is the one permitted to look the more dominant of the two, because the one, and it could be crucial, but Adam Cole's proven us wrong before, the one crucial thing this feels like it's lacking at the moment is any doubt over the winner. Maybe you try, and it's in vain, I think, but maybe you try and establish that.
I guess so, yeah. I'm hyped for the match, but the key dynamic is not the main event, which I think is an indictment of the main event. If you look at the timeline, Paige won that title in November. AEW books its champions, face, heel, whatever, to be incredibly dominant, to win every match they have. They don't pin the champions ordinarily for no reason until a certain point in time. Kenny Omega did a job to Christian Cage really deep into his reign. Chris Jericho did a job to Scorpio Sky, not quite as deep into the reign. It was a great.
But he never lost. So it felt deep, didn't it? Because he'd never lost in AEW history. And yeah.
So, circling back, November to what is now March. If you look at the calendar, and I know Paige has only had 3 matches, but like the amount of minutes spent, all the rest of it, maybe now is the time where it's like you can probably take a loss in a match like this. It's potentially a bit WWE, but maybe they need some last desperate thing. Hangman Page is so intelligent with what he does that I just can't see this not being an unqualified success in a way that I can't anticipate. He's just simply too clever at what he does. What he got out of Archer as a challenger and how he extracted doubt, a different kind of doubt to what people thought possible, I add, makes me think they're going to do something incredibly clever with this match. Along similar lines, just announced before we started recording, Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter are set to take on Thunder Rosa and Mercedes Martinez, which similarly is going to tease out conflict between Baker and Rosa. I've got high expectations for this match, even though Mercedes Martinez is in a bit of a Ruby Soho for me, where it's like she comes equipped with this huge reputation. We've seen glimpses of it in WWE, but not quite enough to think, how about WWE watch everyone?
Yeah, yeah.
The problem must be the company, not the performer. And then you realise, well, maybe it's actually a bit of both. So I'm not as high on the potential quality of the match, but I do love how they finally opened up a Wish version of Deft dovetailing booking compared to the Amazon that is the men's division. But no, I appreciate the endeavour. There's lots of dramatic ramifications ahead of and beyond Revolution here, particularly on the heel side. Match quality wise, again, I love watching Jamie Hayter, but she's very raw. Mercedes Martinez hasn't really lived up to the reputation yet. I think all of the interest here is in Thunder Rosa versus Britt Baker and their exchanges. Happily, they have loads and loads of like intense, fiery physical chemistry. So I think this will land without being a great blowaway match, but it's not meant to be a blowaway match. It's meant to create anticipation for what they hope will be a blowaway match at the Pave. I expect Baker and Hayter miscommunications to both get Thunder Rosa over by pinning Hayter to present her as someone who's going to conceivably win the title at the Revolution pay-per-view, and set up Britt Baker's next program beyond it. Is it as simple as that?
I think it is, but I don't think that should detract from the quality.
Yeah.
It feels like the way we've got to go this. It always felt like it was going to be this tag match or a singles variant of it to build. Once you had the contract signed and announced Rampage, felt like it could only go this way. The comparison to the men's division is apt because this has been a slightly inferior Trojan horse for the Baker Hayter split, like akin to what's happening with CM Punk, MJF and Wardlow. So you're getting the kind of slightly inferior version of it. But the one thing I still can't figure out, and maybe I want to be shown that from this match tonight, and because it's Britt Baker, this is what makes it so, it shouldn't be complicated, but it kind of makes it complicated. The Hayter and Baker split Because Baker has worked entirely as a heel and has remained heel in spite of the incredible responses she gets. She's sent out there to cheat on behalf of like the people she's with, or have people cheat for her, or do the Cobra Kai stuff where she's absolutely the villain of the piece. The week where she'd cut the promo on the local sports team. Like cartoon villainy, but villainy all the same. It's made the hater split tricky because who's the babyface when that happens?
Hater. Baker, 1,000,000%.
Well, yes, she's the babyface because fans love her. But if you think of the narrative, hater's kind of been the, like, she's coming as the muscle, but you'd be sick of Britt Baker too. You'd be the one rolling your eyes going, oh, I don't want to do the DMD. Rebel does the DMD. She's the lackey. I've got sort of gumption of my own here. I should be here for my own reasons, not just for carrying Britt Baker's bags. So I think they've got to, I don't know, like they've got to make this finish feel like when Baker loses the title to Thunder Rosa, which we all assume she will and should at the pay-per-view, how then does whatever happens here feed into a finish where Baker's the babyface on, like, after the fact? Do you know what I mean? I just think that it looks more like a turn for Hater to turn on Baker to finally get away from whatever hold that Britt Baker has had over Jamie Hater. You know, it's not quite master and slave in the same vein that MJF is paying Wardlow's bills, but she is there. She's Baker's running buddy. So typically when the running buddy turns, it's like they've had enough of the overlord. And I need this match to go a certain way that reminds me that, well, it's because everybody, us, the buildings, everybody goes nuts for Britt Baker. So when that split happens, I guess what I'm saying is I don't want Baker to be some sort of cheating coward. When, like, Hater's going to get pinned. Like, if they just do the thing where Baker waves it off and says to Rebel, like, not tonight, leave her. Which you could visualise, couldn't you?
Yeah.
Like, she can handle this one on her own. Let's just get out of here. My knee's sore and I've got a big match. And then Mercedes and Thunder Rosa just, like, easily eat her up after that. Like, is your sympathy then not with Jamie Hater for being left abandoned by Britt Baker?
Yeah. It's kind of been off since she won the belt. It's kind of been off completely.
Nobody really wants to talk about it, do they?
Yeah, it's been completely off since she's won the belt. I don't think they've done a good enough job. Like, I hate doing this, but I'm going to invoke Raw as a comparison in a way that detracts from AEW. The heft in Riddle versus Orton is that you've seen them be mates. You've quite enjoyed, even if you hate both people, their undeniable chemistry with one another. The idea being that it's going to be a little bit heartbreaking when Orton finally turns on Riddle. They've never done enough to make it seem like Hater and Baker have, like, a shared interior life where they are, like, on the road and all the rest of it.
Rebel and Baker, by comparison.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel anywhere near like that. It just feels like it's felt like a device all along. So I don't really have any emotional investment in it. I do like the introduction of Martinez and Thunder Rosa to all of this, but, again, it's just not quite as well thought out as the way that this company books men. But the way this company books men, when it books them incredibly well, leads us to the final talking point of this preview podcast. I'm going to give you the hospital pass. I've been give my thoughts before I go to yours. I have no thoughts on this. They are going to do something better than anything I could think of. How will CM Punk respond to MJF?
I don't know. There's a real magic in the air about this because what was already like an all-timer program, not just for AEW but for pro wrestling, was turned on its head yet again when we, understandably, I think, I don't want to dig it out too much, but saw the dog collar and thought, great, home straight stuff now. Bit of violence, bit of blood, bit of the old wrestling in, out, as it were, because like that's where we're on the way to now. And yet they've given us this at... it's not just how great the detail is and how cool the MJ, how things have turned. It's the timing in which they delivered it. We have... I was going to say 6 days because WWE ring, but we've just got days now before the pay-per-view and CM Punk and MJF have 1 week left and MJF has just dropped an atomic bomb on the whole thing. Absolutely tremendous. All I can think of is everything has always been about CM Punk winning the argument, having the last word, being that cut above and like all that experience, the experience that you can see in that picture because one guy's just been doing this much longer than that child. Means that Punk has always been able to win the day, you know, like as a babyface should, but in a way that's never felt overbearing. And he couldn't win the day last week. So do they now follow that all the way through? What MJF was actually chasing was just the sense that he could win the day as a way to get in the head. Does he really want to reveal now that it was a ruse by, for example, saying, got you, and then Wardlow puts him through a table? Was it worth it, or is it not better to actually wait this out and make Punk stare in his eyes along that dog collar on Sunday? You know, is that not psychologically better for this monster that MJF is, this psychopath, is that not better for him to have that advantage rather than 1-0, but now all Punk's selling is a bad back from the table bump on the way? Like, that would still, like, I understand why they could do that, but this angle just feels better. This angle feels like every time that you've thought, right, things are simplifying, or it's going to go this way, it goes a completely different way, and it goes a way more complex way than we. And that's before the MJF promo as well. So the only thing I could think of when you've posed this question in our prep notes, and I still can't fantasy book how we arrive at it, this is the Colt Cabana week. This is CM Punk coming out saying, like, I've got apologies to make in my life, and I knew that when I came back to AEW. And then it's all building to, like, theoretically apologising to MJF, and CM Punk instead apologising to Colt Cabana and something like that, and saying, like, I want to apologise to Colt Cabana, and I want to sort of, there's this elephant in the room, and, you know, MJF thought, a lot of people thought MJF was going to go one way into my past and he's gone a completely different way, but I've got these demons in my own, Maxwell. It's nothing to do with the dog collar match we're going to have. There's a conversation for another day, you know, that me and you can have over your past, but I won't let it affect what's going to happen to us on Sunday when we're chained to each other or something like that. And he's addressing a demon from his own past as a way to, not to necessarily one-up MJF, but to say, like, I understand where you're coming from and I want to slay these demons too. We'll have a fight, then we'll have a talk, and maybe then it almost volleys it back to MJF. Were you sincere? Is this true or not? Were you just using this as a dig or something along those lines? How else does Punk possibly, like, I can't believe I'm using these words, but I mean them. How else does he regain the momentum?
Yeah, no, I've got absolutely no idea what they're going to do with this. What an incredible twist it was last week. In a way, my old wrestling head just wants MJF to say, let's take the piss the whole time. I'm going to brutalise you. And then you get the CM Punk, but just feels so much more rote.
Taped ribs are not as captivating as CM Punk walking out there with doubt in his eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. Because the way I can see it happening with my stupid WWE brain, that company has been so bad for so long that it infects everything, is that if they don't do some kind of recalibration of the dynamic tonight, and it sort of, CM Punk cuts this incredibly heartfelt promo in which he's plagued by doubt, and he sort of says, I'm still gonna fight, but I don't know how much I'm gonna enjoy it, or it's something I have to do more than something I want to, or something like that. He could really lay his soul bare about, like, the fan experience that he's had. He could maybe call MJF the fan at the airport, someone who wants his picture, but he's just gonna sell it. Someone who.
What about if he, off the back of the picture, he offers him the handshake? You know, off the back of the Bryan picture, Maxwell come on out and he offers him the hand. And now MJF's got to have that moment. Do I show my hand here? Do I reveal what? Or do I shake his hand and try and stick with him?
Yeah, but my worry is if they don't do that and it just sort of, there's more ambiguity heading to the pay-per-view, my stupid head that is so, has such a lack of trust in AEW to this day, because that is such a key problem with WWE's monopoly. And I'm suddenly thinking, are they going to do some Why Am I So Violent? Edge style in a turmoil over whether or not I actually really hurt MJF or not.
Yeah.
These people are so much better than that, and yet that's where my stupid mind goes, because it's been polluted by WWE. Look, you've got no idea, I've got no idea, nobody listening has got that idea. The whole point is all of our ideas will be stupid, but each and every one of you, there it is again, each and every one of you are absolutely along for this ride.
They're not. Is there a way to dress up a cop-out? Is there a way to have Tony Schiavone or somebody... Yeah, Tony Schiavone would be great, because this is the one time that he's going to be nice to MJF, but where you have brief studio interviews with each man and they say very little, and it's all, see you Sunday, Punk, see you Sunday, Maxwell, and that's it. And there's no live crowd interaction, there's no big angle, there's no... Nothing is particularly resolved, but nothing is particularly left hanging.
Is there
a way to dress it up? You know, like, I'm not saying, like, here's a video package. They're not in Jacksonville tonight because they're preparing, but, you know, like, something that feels like you're still getting a bit of this program. It's the hottest thing on the show. So it's hard. Like, it'll be noticeable by his absence if it's not featured.
I don't think I've ever been so clueless about what to expect from an AEW thing. It's almost like I couldn't write the first 10 seconds of Relationship of Command. So I'm going to write the next chapter of this pro wrestling. It's so above my comprehension, my abilities and all the rest of it, so I'm just going to leave it there. We're obviously very interested in what you think is going to happen.
Have you ever tasted skin?
Yeah. Like, we're interested in all opinions. They'll all be completely wrong and theirs will be much better. But give them to us nonetheless on Twitter at WhatCultureWWE, where you can also follow Michael Hamflett at
Michael Hamflett.
And you can follow me at M Sidrick. Once again, that all can be found at WhatCultureWWE. Don't forget to Jesus Christ, Adam Wilborn is such a professional.
How does he do the end? How does he
just
do the end?
I've spent like a year or two or three at this point, nailing the intro in his absence. I'll never get the outro right. We'll see you soon.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.